Faithful and loyal to Ghana, my motherland, I pledge myself to the service of Ghana with all my strength and with all my heart. I promise to hold in high esteem our heritage won for us through the blood and toil of our fathers. And I pledge myself in all things to uphold and defend the good name of Ghana, so help me God.
The time is 6 o'clock. This is Radio Ghana, the news presented by Lily Defo. In the headlines, Executive Secretary of Constitution Review Commission lauds government for accepting and issuing white paper on its recommendations. ISODEC opposes removal of fuel subsidy. Staff of Ghana Revenue Authority charged to enforce tax laws without fear or favor. Malian couple receive 100 lashes for having a child out of wedlock. And delay in announcing runoff election results raises tension in Egypt.
Radio Ghana, the ultimate news reference. We are reliable. The world listens to our voice.
The Executive Secretary of the Constitution Review Commission, Dr. Raymond Atuguba, says government's acceptance of its recommendations and the issuance of the white paper is a clear demonstration of regard for the people. The report also represents the collective wisdom of the people of Ghana. Dr. Atuguba explained to Agatha Samoa on a current affairs program behind the news how the commission came by those recommendations.
It's exciting that government has accepted 90% and more of the recommendations of the Constitution Review Commission. It just shows that the collective wisdom of the people of Ghana that has been represented in the report has found favor with the government.
Now, the commission was set up 2 years ago to review the 1992 Constitution. How did you arrive at your recommendations?
Over the two-year period, there was an extensive consultation exercise, and many people know what took place. Millions of Ghanaians had the opportunity to interact with the commission, and through a process of deliberation, consensus building, research and analysis.
Government's white paper on the Constitution continues to attract varied opinions from a section of the population. A political analyst, Dr. Kabu Kain Davis, called for circumspection in taking decisions on the recommendations. He said the retention of the four-year renewable term of the presidency is laudable.
I think we should retain 4-year renewable term of the presidency because mature democracy, especially in the case of the United States, which its model we are emulating, shows too much, and especially considering the political history of Africa since decolonization, too much political power, too long a term, can lead to certain consequences which may not be pleasant, especially in the case of Ghana. From the First Republic, the Second Republic, the Third Republic, and now we are in the longest republic, which is the Fourth Republic. This is auguring well for us, and I think we should maintain it. Concerning the factor of the presidency paying taxes, I think it's good as well, because if you realize, the informal sector is larger than even the formal sector. And the informal sector, so many companies, businesses, self-employed are all participating in the economy without paying taxes. Of course, from a political point of view, you hear people saying, if there's so much misuse of government funding or government funds or government revenue, why should I pay tax?
Deputy Majority Leader Rashid Kalpu is proposing a 5-year term for the presidential mandate instead of the 4-year term.
The argument is that Ghanaians don't have the patience to wait beyond 4 years, you know, and that we are very impatient to see the back of a president once he has done his term, especially if it is true term of 8 years. And so because we have a short attention span in this exercise, the argument is that let's allow the 4 years to go. But I think that our young democracy and an economy that is not that strong, we would have been better off by going for a 5-year term. We have a 5-year mandate. mandate in which the president will spend 3 years organizing himself and the next 4 years before he then prepares for an election and goes into campaigning. But right now, he spends 1 year getting himself identified with the system, doing the appointments and organizing, you know, getting to understand the system. By the time he enters the second year, there's already an agitation by the opposition that in 2 years he has done no job, he has done nothing, and he needs to go away for another person to come. How can you spend 2 years with that? But it's not the fault of the president-elect, the president at the time. I would have wished that we allow 5 years tenure of office.
Meanwhile, a constitutional lawyer, Nana Santi Bediatu, thinks reviewing the constitution is in the right direction since there are gaps which need to be bridged.
I think it's a timely intervention. I think some of us have found that there are gaps in the constitution that need a tightening up. I think there are those who've argued that perhaps through the process of judicial interpretation, some of those gaps could have been filled. But I think 20 years is not too soon to take a look at some of the grey areas and the gaps that have been identified in the Constitution, as well as those that are not gaps but are clearly unworkable within the framework of our democratic experience today.
And what also do you make of the recommendations of the Constitution Review Commission and the issuance of the white paper by government?
I don't recall every single one of the recommendations they made, but I think some of those were the ones that I did not believe, for example, that we should extend the presidential term beyond the 4 years. I did not believe that we should allow people to be in office for more than two terms, whether consecutively or not. I think two terms is enough. And I did not think that it was wise to restrict the president's choice of ministers to 50% having to come from parliament. So some of the headline items I agree with, and I think it's in the right direction.
Those were views expressed by a section of the public on government's acceptance of the recommendations made by the Constitution Review Committee on the issuance of the government's white paper. Ghana has dropped to 50 in global ranking as the most peaceful country in the world, 8 points from its previous 42nd position last year, published by the Institute for Economy and Peace. The index strives to measure what it calls peacefulness, what might have contributed to this fall. A peace and conflict expert, Dr. Ken Ahosu, said the fall in ranking is not commendable and attributed it to irresponsible statements by some politicians. Meanwhile, an independent analyst and program officer at the Center for Democratic Governance, Paul Abrampa-Mensa, has described as not surprising the fall of Ghana's ranking in the Global Peace Index for 2012. According to him, the incidence of conflict and violence normally rise in election years. Speaking on Behind the News, Mr. Abrampa-Mensa put the whole analysis in perspective.
Looking at the situation we have, we find ourselves now, and also in the election year, I don't think this is strange, because our report from 2004 has indicated that in election year, especially in the period that the Electoral Commission rules out its public activities and political parties also join forces, we record increase of violence and conflict in the country. So given this report, I don't know which years it covered, but if it's this particular year, I don't see any strange thing in it.
So apart from being an election year, what other reasons account for Ghana being a less peaceful country?
Well, when we talk about theory of conflict and war or violence, it is one of the cardinal principles that comes up is that they are undertones. Issues that have come up that have developed over the years that capitalize on public events such as election particularly to come up. So we might have fifth-tenancy conflicts that have been lying down. We might have tribal issues, we might have border issues, we might have constituency demarcation issues, we might have conflict between party, within party, among parties, we might have youth routes, we might have all these things, just like demonstrations pick up in election year. These issues also pick up because people try to make their cases here so that we have support of either the sitting government or the opposition. So there's a direct correlation from all the research that we've done or all conflict monitoring reports that have come out, that there's a direct correlation between increase of conflict and the rollout of electoral commission.
in character and nature, why not? Let them send to court and be dealt with. It serves as a deterrent. But a lot of the cases that are sent to court, be it land issue, because not all the issues that are being raised are political in nature. There are land problems, land demarcation, problem with religious situations, chieftaincy, labor-related issues, and the like. These are the kind of things that are a lot more pronounced. It was until the biometric registration that was opened that some of the skirmishes we saw, you can attribute it to politics in that direct situation. Those other things like some chiefs and their youth saying that they will not permit either political office holders to go to their constituency or they will not participate in the election. Those are things that are political in nature and cannot be said to be conflict per se. If we line them up in that kind of decision, we must place them in the compartment where they belong.
Labour consultant and conflict resolution expert Austin Gamet. Independent presidential candidate JKM Ayamfo says he has identified factors militating against development and has proposed solutions. He says it is his desire that all Ghanaians will work to build a nation where the basic necessities of life are available as a matter of course.
Looking at the political scene that we have now, there are signs of danger, and which I think we must try to avert. Political parties engage in elections, and those elections have invariably ended up in violence. And I think Ghana, we must take some proactive measures. We should not be complacent and just behave like, excuse me to say, the ostrich, bury our heads down and pretend not to see there's nothing happening. And it's in that spirit that I think an independent candidate must come up and stand up and contest, run for a presidency, win and form a government of all the people. A government, not a sectarian government for one section of the people, but for all the people, and maintain the peace that we want.
You have come out with a manifesto and identified factors militating against development. What are these?
First and foremost, I identified the issues that are at stake. But identified first and foremost is the governance system. We divided ourselves into artificial groups, struggling for power in the name of competition. And it is that I think we must war against. So we must look at another option, which do not have these danger signs. And that's why I'm contesting.
Do you have the might to manage the problems of the country?
Oh, yes, but I think, first of all, you have to identify them. I have to identify them, I have to propose solutions. And then, of course, you work with people. So with these three, I think I can manage the affairs of state. I have been in management for some time. I mean, at various levels of administration, and I've had both theoretical and practical training. In fact, aside my proposals to the Constitutional Review Commission, I said one of the concerns of the president that he must have management skills, both theory and practice.
Independent presidential candidate JKM Ayamfo talking to Gbagbo Bruce. And still on politics, leadership of the Inter-Party Youth Committee, IPYC, is demanding from authorities of the University of Ghana to lift with immediate effect the ban on political party activity at the University of Ghana campus, according to IPYC Chair Ludwig Klonje. The decision by the University of Ghana to disallow the operation of political parties on campus amounts to the stifling of the country's human resource and capital, because the university serves as a nursing ground for many political ambitions. Mr. Klonje made the point when the committee paid a courtesy call on the flag bearer of the PNC, Hassan Ayariga, in Accra.
The Inter-Party Youth Committee's call on PNC flag bearer Hassan Ayariga is to solicit him and his party's commitment at ensuring peace in the country before, during and after the 2012 elections. The act is part of a project IPAC has in place with support from the Frederick Ebert Foundation to bring on board all political parties with representation in Parliament, that is the PNC, the NDC, the CPP, and the MPP, to commit to maintaining peace. IPAC Chair Ludwig Hlonze hints that it will reach out to former Presidents Kufuor and Rawlings for their take on propagating peace. On the issue of outright ban on political activities at the University of Ghana, Mr. Hlonze says IPAC is disappointed at the action and wants the Vice Chancellor to reverse the university's decision and allow the youth to explore their political ambitions in an academic atmosphere.
Rebecca Ekpe reporting. This news comes to you from Radio Ghana, Accra. The major stories: Executive Secretary of Constitution Review Commission lauds government for accepting and issuing white paper on its recommendations. ISODEC opposes removal of fuel subsidy. Staff of Ghana Revenue Authority charged to enforce tax laws without fear or favor. Malian couple receives 100 lashes for having a child out of wedlock. And delay in announcing runoff election results raises tension in Egypt. Please stay tuned.
Radio Ghana, the ultimate news reference. We are reliable. The world listens to our voice.
The rest of the news. The Rights to Information Coalition has presented its draft proposals on the Rights to Information Bill to the Parliamentary Select Joint Committee. This will allow the committee to review the amendment of the bill before it is passed into law by the end of July. Speaking at the National Stakeholders Conference in Accra, a lawyer and member of the Rights to Information Coalition, Akutuampao, urged the Parliamentary Joint Committee to speed up the amendment process of the bill so it can be passed into law as soon as possible. Malko Fiahiajiman has filed this report.
Lawyer Akutuampao said the coalition's proposal suggested that when the Right to Information Bill is passed into law, access to information should be relatively very fast. He said people should get access to information in not more than 30 days upon request. He said the coalition asked that an independent committee be set to handle the Right to Information Law instead of it being the Ministry of Justice and Attorney General's Department as suggested by Parliament.
The major matter has to do with which organ should be responsible, ensure compliance for implementation, the mass education and training that must be carried out when the bill is passed into law. The bill quite strangely makes the Minister for Justice, the office, responsible for the implementation of the bill. And we think that if the whole problem with the right with disclosure of information to the public is that government tend to withhold information and are happy operating under the cloak of secrecy. To make a member of cabinet, who is most likely to be a member of the ruling party, the person responsible for ensuring that that same government complies with its obligations of disclosure, it simply cannot work. So we've been campaigning very seriously for an independent information commission.
Lawyer and member of the Rights to Information Coalition, Akutuampao. The Integrated Social Development Center, ISODEC, has taken a strong position against the removal of fuel subsidy by government. This follows a call on Ghana by the IMF to end subsidies on fuel since it cost the nation $31.9 million a month. According to the IMF, petroleum subsidy benefits the rich more than the poor. At a roundtable in Accra on who pays and benefits from petroleum subsidy, a policy analyst, Dennis Incho, indicated that petroleum impacts greatly on cost of transport, which has rippling effects on goods and services. Here's a report by Victoria Ahaji.
The forum discussed how much subsidy Ghanaians enjoy on their fuel consumption, who benefits most from the subsidy, and the implications of subsidy withdrawal on the national budget. Mr. Incho noted that the withdrawal of subsidy will bring about increased transport costs, higher food prices, and production costs for the various sectors of the economy. He said even though subsidies are expensive and financing them has become very difficult for developing countries, its removal will be suicidal without improving the structure of governance. Mr. Incho therefore called on government to put in place mechanisms to prevent households from switching to the consumption of subsidized fuel products.
A report by Victoria Ahaji. The Ghana Revenue Authority, GRA, has been charged to act professionally by applying and enforcing the tax laws without fear or favor. They should also regularly educate customers on their rights, responsibilities, and obligations. This was in a message delivered on behalf of the Minister of Finance and Economic Planning, Dr. Kwabena Dufo, by the Tax Policy Advisor of the Ministry, Dr. Edward Ladisiao, at the launch of the GRA's Code of Conduct and Ethics in Accra. Yaya Kwamua has filed this report.
The Code of Ethics and Conduct has been developed with a conscious approach that involves the participation of management and staff. The tax policy advisor at the Minister of Finance and Economic Planning, Dr. Edward Labi Xiang, said the code is expected to form the basis for any integrity initiative leading to good governance. The code, he noted, is to address the values and principles underpinning staff behavior and relationship with stakeholders. Impartiality in service delivery, effectiveness and efficiency, accountability and transparency. Dr. Labi Xiang assured management and staff that government on its part will offer the needed assistance and emphasize the need to provide better services to customers.
Yaya Kwamua reporting. Ada has so many untapped natural resources which have been lying fallow. It doesn't just lie that investors are being encouraged to exploit these resources in the Ada area. An aide to the President, Lee Lante Van Der Poy, extended the invitation when he launched the Diamond Jubilee of the Asafotufiame in Accra. He said investment and tourism and other potential in Ada will not only bring massive development, but will also provide employment to the youth. Here's a report by Antoinette Aba.
Asafotufiame means firing of musketry or war festival. It was celebrated by the people of Ada to remember the achievements in the war for settlement fought by the ancestors. An aide to the President, Neil Lante Van Der Poy, called on the youth to take their education seriously as this is the only way they will be able to achieve greater heights. They must also make sure that they are not exploited by politicians for their parochial interests. The MP for Ada, Alex Detenio, said, although Ada has a lot of challenges, it is making inroads in agriculture. He said that the government is making frantic efforts to improve the irrigation of farms and the processing of farm produce.
There are a number of development issues that we can be proud of. Even if we are not able to remove these obstacles in our way, we can see for ourselves that we are making inroads into the solution of these problems. Talk about development in agriculture. We should also be able to count our years of development and progress and the improvement of the lives of the people of Ada.
Antoine Jabba filed that report. 50 representatives from civil society, labor movements, mining affected communities and gender groups, as well as artisanal and small-scale mining organizations will converge on Accra next week to discuss how to facilitate and deepen understanding of the substantive context of the African mining reform agenda. The conference is jointly organized by the Pan-African Extractive Sector Network and the International Trade Union Confederation. The coordinator of Third World Network for Africa, Dr. Yao Graham, who announced this at a news conference yesterday, was not happy. The logic of the mining industry has been driven by the foreign market. He said Africa is very much at the receiving end and called on the African peer review mechanism to bring the experiences to bear on the mining sector. Asidi Bangui Kela Sutton for Radio Ghana.
Africa has been one of the key suppliers of strategic minerals to industrialized countries since colonial times. Despite the long history of mining, the continent is yet to fully optimize the potential of mineral resources to catalyze economic transformation. Since the 1980s, governments of Africa have undertaken a series of reforms aimed at optimizing the contribution of mining to national development. The favorable environment the reforms created aided the revival of foreign investments in the mining sector. While the revival expanded mineral production and exports, its contribution to social and economic development objectives has been far less certain and has even been contested in many African countries.
That report was filed by Asidi Bango Ekela. The coalition of NGOs against mining in the Etiwa forest has again urged governments to rescind its plans and terminate all contract agreements of prospecting mineral resources and turning the Etiwa range forest into a mine, according to a leading member of the coalition, Daryl Bonsu. The maximization of mining benefits should not upset the environmental and social benefits the forest reserve offers the country. Mr. Bosu was speaking at a conference in Accra to commemorate Rio Plus 20 Day in Ghana. Linda Goje reports.
The aggressive pursuit of intensive mining as means to accelerated economic development is putting pressure on Ghana's forest and life-supporting resources. According to the coalition of NGOs against mining in Etiwa, the intention of government to turn one of the only two upland forest reserves in the country is not in the interest of natural heritage for the populace.
Linda Goje reporting. The sub-regional body ECOWAS has re-strategized in order to achieve Vision 2020 by involving ordinary citizens in its activities. To this end, a seminar to sensitize people to the activities of ECOWAS is being held in Accra. Sandra Danso brings us the details.
The three-day seminar will create the platform for the public to be well-informed on the regional integration agenda and to be enlightened on various ongoing community programs and projects. The Minister for Foreign Affairs and Regional Integration, Alhaji Muhammad Mumuni, in a message expressed the need for ECOWAS citizens to know what they stand to benefit from community programs and projects, as well as know what they stand to lose if they do not play their part in the implementation process. He said the ECOWAS Commission is promoting cooperation and integration as a step towards the creation of a common market. Alhaji Mumuni noted that effective grassroots participation, including the public and private sectors, civil society, the media, as well as people in the informal sector, is a necessary tool to boost efforts at promoting intra-community trade, which according to him is an important element for sustainable economic development. The Director of Communication of the ECOWAS Commission, Sonny Yugo, spoke about what the Commission hopes to achieve at the end of the seminar.
In the next 3 days, we'll of course be discussing ECOWAS, we'll be discussing institutions of the community, presentations will be made by my colleagues from community institutions, and then you'll have an opportunity to also engage with them so that we can collectively chart a course forward within the context of an ECOWAS of citizens. We hope that at the end of it all, we will have an enriched through this interaction, and we'll probably be able to reinforce the roadmap towards an ECOWAS of people which we hope to realize through our vision 2020.
Director of Communications of the ECOWAS Commission, Sonny Ugo, ending that report by Sandra Danso. Vice President John Dramani Mahama has signed a book of condolence in memory of the late Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, Nayef bin Abdulaziz. The ceremony took place at the residence of the Saudi ambassador in Accra. The Crown Prince died at the age of 79 on the 16th of this month while receiving treatment at a hospital in Geneva. Vice President Mahama recounted the cordial bilateral relations between Ghana and Saudi Arabia. He said the Saudi government has also been very instrumental, particularly in the health sector, in the organization of the annual pilgrimage to Mecca. Government has already sent a special letter of condolence to the royal family in Saudi Arabia. Islamist occupying northern Mali, the defenders of faith, have given a couple 100 lashes for having a child out of wedlock as they continue enforcing Sharia. People who were watching at the Sankore Square said it was like a show. They've asked women to wear veils, whipped smokers, and destroyed cartons of cigarettes. They are also banning the sale of alcohol. The results of Egypt's presidential runoff has been delayed by the election authorities, further raising tension across the country. They were due to be announced today, but the election commission said it needs more time to look into complaints presented by the candidates. Both Islamist Mohamed Morsi and former Prime Minister Ahmed Shafik claim they won last weekend's vote. Meanwhile, thousands of opposition supporters are protesting in Cairo's Tahrir Square. The Burmese opposition leader Aung San Suu Kyi will be given the rare honor of addressing both houses of parliament today. She will deliver her speech in Westminster Hall, an honor only accorded to heads of state. It is her first trip to Britain since leaving 24 years ago to lead Burma's pro-democracy movement. Ms. Suu Kyi will also meet the Prince of Wales and the Duchess of Cornwall and hold talks with the Prime Minister. Ms. Suu Kyi accepted an honorary civil law doctorate from Oxford University. In a speech, she said her memories of her time in Oxford helped her while she was under house arrest. Ms. Suu Kyi, who was under house arrest in Burma for more than 2 decades, received the advanced degree 19 years after it was awarded her. To end the news, the main points again. The Executive Secretary of the Constitution Review Commission, Dr. Raymond Atuguba, says government's acceptance of its recommendations and the issuance of the white paper is a clear demonstration of regard for the people. The Integrated Social Development Center, ISODEC, is against the removal of fuel subsidy by government. This follows a call on government by the IMF to end subsidies on fuel. A Malian couple has been given 100 lashes of the whip for having a child out of wedlock. And the delay in the release of the runoff results in Egypt has raised tension across the country. That ends the news from Radio Ghana.